Hi, Alex. Thanks very much. I lecture at Kingston University on the GIS program there, and my principal research interests have been in digital elevation models, both in using the data and in acquiring it. So really the focus on this talk is about acquiring aerial imagery, and particularly from low altitude platforms, which are frequently used for quite a bit of mapping applications. So the key message I want you to take away today is low altitude aerial photography, LAP, and particularly want to talk about platforms, sensors, and also briefly talk about a case study. So I would briefly identify, when we start trying to image the Earth's surface, three broad scales. And my interests have been using this for geomorphological phenomena, but obviously there's quite a variety of interest in lots of other types of land surface features. So we might have micro features, which can range from sort of the centimetre scale up to 10 or tens of centimetres. And in the glacial geomorphology that I work with, that might be things like striae or chatter marks, so 1 to 10 of centimetres. We have this mesoscale remote sensing, which might include things like Seekelvannen or P-forms, and perhaps more commonly Roche-Moutonnets or Drumlins at the smaller end, and these are sort of the metre up to around the 50-metre size landform. And then finally, we might be interested in the macroscale, very, very large features, anywhere from sort of hundreds of metres up to kilometres in size. And again, in glacial geomorphology, these can range up to around 80 kilometres in size, so very, very big features. Now, in terms of mapping these things, we can obviously go out on the streets in an open street map sense and actually try to physically walk around them or cycle around them and map them in that way, so field mapping. Or we can use remotely acquired imagery, aerial photos, satellite imagery, to find images of the areas we're interested in. There are issues of scale that we can think of here. So once we start using imagery that images areas of the order of tens of kilometres, quite often it's not detailed enough to see smaller and smaller features. So graphically, we might think of these three scales, macro, meso, and micro. So again, at the micro scale, you can actually go, in terms of remote sensing, down to microns in size using things like confocal scanning microscopes. We have these mesoscale platforms and then satellites from space for macro imaging. What I'm interested in today, though, is the meso platform, what I would call the missing resolution or the missing revolution. So at micro scales, quite often what we do is field work. If we're talking about tens, hundreds of metres, then we might go out on the ground and physically map them. That doesn't take too long and is quite detailed and low cost. When we go to macro, when we start covering very large areas, then we're interested then in remotely sensed technologies because it's much, much faster. But the meso tends to be a missing scale. There's far less focus on it. And that's what I want to look at in slightly more detail now. And the first part of that is thinking about platforms. How is it that we might actually acquire imagery? What is it that we put our sensor on to acquire imagery of the Earth's surface? And that's not to say mesoscale imagery can't be acquired, because it can and it routinely is. And the most common platforms you'll find for this are heliborne, low-level, low-altitude airborne, and some commercial satellites which go down to the order of sort of 50 centimetres for a single pixel. So this data is being collected, perhaps not vast quantities of it, and we're interested in that sort of 1 to 1 metre resolution scale. These can be quite expensive. I haven't got any costs for the heliborne, but you're talking a considerable amount of money per hour just to hire a helicopter, and then if you want to instrument it as well, there'll be additional costs on top of that. In terms of low-level airborne, just to give you an example, NERC have their own aircraft, which they have instrumented with a variety of different sensors. If you want to hire that, then that costs of the order of £4,000 per hour. So collecting that type of imagery is expensive. If you go to commercial satellite, one of the higher resolution sensors on board QuickBird, 61 centimetres, costs you around $23 per square kilometre, but that's if it's already been acquired. If they haven't got it, you would have to specifically task them and pay them to go off and get it. So none of these are particularly low cost, and none of them provide a particularly good temporal resolution. Once you've acquired the imagery, it's unlikely that you'll get any more for that area for a while. So what are the other, perhaps less conventional, options in terms of acquiring low altitude imagery? Well, the things we hear about most frequently now are UAVs, and this is perhaps at the upper end of the UAV, certainly in terms of surveying. This is called a BAT, and this has a three-axis gimbal video camera sitting on the front of it there, has still camera in the wing. This is US made, so it's 13 feet long, flies up to 122 kilometers an hour, has an 8-hour flight time, 350-mile limit, 10,000-foot ceiling, a 30-pound payload, requires 300 feet to actually launch it, and runs off a petrol engine at the back. If you have $135,000, then you can pick one up and use that for some surveying. So that might not be an option for some. It obviously provides quite a significant surveying capability if you did invest in something like that. I'll come to it again at the air, towards the end of the talk, but flying something like this also in the US requires you to have someone on the team who has a full pilot's license as well. So these are controlled by the CAA, which means there are quite a variety of restrictions to make sure that it's responsibly used. So this is another option. We've got a quadcopter here. Copters are quite popular, so this is remote controlled. Again, at the other end of the spectrum, this has got a very light payload. I haven't got the specs for it here, but if you access the slides, all of the slides have got URLs on them, so you can find where the drones are from. And this is designed for use in particularly in urban environments where you've got tight spaces, you need vertical movement of your aircraft. Now, perhaps the area where we've got the biggest amount of innovation taking place are in these types of UAVs. This is called the SenseFly and is a Swiss firm. They were demonstrating this at one of the GI conferences earlier this year. This weighs 500 grams, quite a remarkable weight, has a 30-minute flight time, entirely electric motor on board, 36 kilometres an hour and around an 18-kilometre total distance for it. So much, much lower specs, but you're talking about a very, very light aircraft here. Now, what's remarkable about this? This is the first UAV to be flown by the UN in a humanitarian crisis, and it's 30 seconds to take off from opening the case. They needed something that they could launch instantly because otherwise they have crowds around them. So you open it up, you start the engine, you throw it, and it's off. And they didn't throw it, but they did go to the full point of launch, and it is 30 seconds, which is amazing. This is one of the ones that's taking some of the headlines at the moment. This is called the Gatewing X100. It takes a step up from the SenseFly. So this weighs 2 kilos now. It's a 1 meter wingspan on it. Has a 45-minute flight time and a top speed of 130 kilometres hour, but typically does around 50 or 60. Can work in winds up to 65 kilometres an hour and light rain, and altitudes up to 750 metres. 15-minute setup time for this, though. It has a launch pad and a big rubber band on it that just launches it out into the air. €50,000 price tag on this. About a week after the trade show in April, they were bought up by Trimble, and Trimble are now selling this, I assume, worldwide. because we've got a little bit of time, they have a demo video, which I'll show you now, which is just a couple of minutes, which is quite nice, just to show you how all of these types of UAVs work.
Imagine being able to achieve highly accurate mapping whenever and wherever needed, even in less than favorable weather conditions, such as wind, light rain, and cloud cover, where conventional photogrammetry simply won't suffice, while staying with both feet firmly on the ground. Introducing the Gatewing X100, revolutionary aerial mapping and surveying system. The Gatewing X100 is a game-changer because this system is revolutionizing the surveying and mapping industry like never before. The gap between traditional terrestrial surveying and conventional photogrammetry has finally been filled. Now, surveyors can remotely and safely measure large, difficult-to-reach, or dangerous areas. For photogrammetrists, smaller projects suddenly become highly cost-effective. The Gatewing concept consists of two main elements, image acquisition and image processing. Image acquisition is conducted using the X100, a light, unmanned aircraft with an onboard high-quality calibrated camera which captures images with a resolution of 5 centimeters when flying at a default altitude of 150 meters. The image resolution can be altered by modifying the flying altitude. The strength of the system lies in the fact that flights are conducted in a fully automated manner, from launch to landing. No piloting skills are required to fly the X100. Instead, you merely facilitate the aircraft's operation, which includes indicating the area to be covered and selecting a takeoff and landing spot. Simply plan the area that needs to be scanned based on the easy-to-use software wizard. Launch the device and let the X100 cover the predefined area. Through parallel sweeps following a regular shape, the aircraft will then take high-quality pictures with a high overlap. The ground control station is only used to monitor the flight and to allow an on-site image quality check. The patent-pending sturdy body, made from expanded polypropylene and reinforced with a carbon frame, was custom designed by Gatewing engineers for its durability, power efficiency, and outstanding weatherproof properties. Because of the lightweight material and built-in fail-safe procedures, the X100 is the safest unmanned aircraft ever made. The X100 was designed for maximum coverage. With one single battery charge, the aircraft can scan several square kilometers. Another key factor in the design of the X100 was its employability in different weather conditions. The device operates perfectly in hot, cold, drizzly, and windy conditions, with wind speeds of up to 60 kilometers an hour. The X100 packs some amazing technology into a 2-kilogram platform with a wingspan of only 100 centimeters. This makes it easy to carry and use anywhere. All these features make the Gatewing X100 the world's fastest and easiest to use professional surveying and mapping tool. For the creation of orthophotos or digital surface models, Gatewing offers StretchOut, a highly automated software package that converts your raw X100 image dataset in no time with just a couple of clicks. If you do not wish to invest in standalone software, you can simply upload your images to the Gatewing cloud, and just a few hours later, you'll receive your orthophoto or DSM. With both software solutions, the quality of the results is outstanding. Razor sharp, no artifacts, intense colors, and above all, the spatial accuracy, which makes it a true surveying tool. Every surveying or mapping professional should own a mapping tool this advanced. And now you can.
I think that's enough advertising for them. But I hope you get all of these systems work in a very similar way. to the gate wing, and there are a variety of different products. Again, here's another one just called Smart Plane. So this is a very, very competitive market space at the moment, and the big surveyors are now moving into it. And you'll find that virtually all of the engineering companies, when they do large infrastructure projects, will be using these types of planes to collect imagery. So the full length of the M1 extension, or widening through junctions 11, up, there's about three or four junctions, was all flown with these UAVs prior to the beginning, simply because it's cheaper and faster for them, and then they own the IPR to the imagery as well. So much so that you've got open source projects coming in. So this is Open Relief, which is designing both the aircraft and the software alongside it to produce open source designs that can be used in humanitarian situations. So it's a wide open space at the moment, and there's quite a lot. If anyone has seen the Arduino microcontroller boards, there's a variety of Arduino projects around UAVs and drones as well. It's not just about drones, though. There are some other types of products around. And there were almost certainly pigeons harmed in the collection of this imagery. But believe it or not, that was patented for the 1907 World Fair in Berlin, and they did acquire imagery. But we've moved on since then. So there are a variety of other techniques. Helikites, which is balloons and kites put into one. We just have balloons on their own. This is a company called SkyCell in the UK who do a variety of surveying projects. This is actually inside York Minster. And if you think about trying to acquire detailed imagery of an interior of a building like that, very, very difficult to do. And a balloon is almost ideal for that type of surveying. We have elevated platforms. This is a company called Elevated Platforms, and you can buy these poles that extend up into the air, used a lot by estate agents, up to around 15, 20 metres in height. And obviously you can stick cameras on people on microlights or paragliders. So really to recap, there are a variety of novel methods around. This isn't a new problem by any stretch of the imagination, but the key to any of these low altitude technologies is that it's simple, fast and cheap. So what are some of the pros and cons? Well, model aircraft, or UAVs as we see them, very good for acquiring a coverage of an area of interest. Lifting capacity is an issue unless you're prepared to fork out for a much larger, powerful drone, a bit like the Bat earlier on. Stability, possibly, with them moving around their main axis. And perhaps the key thing is regulation. Even the gate wing, there are restrictions on it. So there is a 500 metre horizontal distance and a 400 foot vertical distance to the acquisition of the imagery using the gate wing. In the UK, you're not allowed to go outside those limits. They have applied for, and I think we'll be getting a license to go, that's called line of sight license. They're going for an extended line of sight, which allows 750 metres horizontal distance. So there are quite severe restrictions on the use of UAVs. You also have to be a trained user then. You don't need a pilot's license like in the US, but you do need to be trained by a CAA-approved trainer. Balloons. Very, very good, excellent stability. It can be expensive to transport, and it's around £200 plus for a helium refill on a balloon. As soon as you get any wind, they're pretty poor. They're just going to bounce around. Good in Mediterranean environments or indoors. Telescopic mask, again, good, but limited height. You're not going to get above around 20 metres. So the alternative, which is what I've been using for a little while now, are kites. And some of the benefits of kites include very high loft, even in low wind conditions. They're relatively simple and cheap, and they're highly portable, so they're ideal for remote field situations. By no means to say they're the solution to everything. They provide a solution that some of the other techniques can't on certain situations. There's been a huge uptake in using kites for remote sensing over the last 10 years, and that's a result of robotic components to allow us to build rigs, some innovative kite designs specifically designed for photography, and the inexorable rise of digital cameras. So, We want, with modern kite designs, very high lift, maximum stability. So we want the most boring kite we can get, something that can lift a heavy load and just stay in the sky, a bit like a skyhook. We don't want anything that's agile or controllable. It's simply got to stay up there and do nothing. So some of the designs, this is the Flowform, a soft kite, and based upon foil-type parachutes, which first came around 30 years ago, very deep cells, provide high lift and good stability. The main problem with these is if the wind dies, they fall out of the sky. Here's a framed kite called the Depero, based upon a design called the Pearson Roller, very, very good lift in very low wind conditions. Has a much higher flying angle than a soft kite, so this flies up to sort of 60 or 70 degrees as opposed to about 40, 45, 50. So if you're in a tight environment, a framed kite is better, and obviously if the wind dies, it sails to the ground rather than dropping like a stone. This shows you an example of the sorts of wind speeds that you can fly in. So the Depero there can fly sort of 3-4 mile an hour winds, so very, very low. And obviously as the winds get faster and faster, you want to go with smaller and smaller kites. Otherwise, they will, a bit like power kiting, they will lift you off the ground. So we've got a platform now in terms of a kite. What sort of rig do we have? Well, you can buy some rigs off the shelf from some aerial photography suppliers. And the main design now tends to have an inner and an outer cradle to allow you to have full rotation, panning and tilting of your camera. There's a suspension system that you put on using just thin kite lines between the main kite line and your rig. We made our components out of carbon plate to make it as light as possible, so our rig was around 250 pounds, and this is an image of the rig we had. So it's connected at the top here to the main kite line, so we get full rotation around that axis, we get tilting around this axis and panning around this axis. These are standard servos from robotics that you can use to do all the rotation along those axes. And then we use model aircraft remote controls just to do the remote control on the servos and on firing the camera as well. This shows you an alternative design that we implemented as well. This one weighs 115 grams and it has the suspension arm built into it. The only rotation it allows is around the vertical axis like this. Which is designed to make it as light as possible. So this shows you the main rig hooked up with a camera. We put a digital SLR on board. This is a Canon D70. And we've got the suspension system attached up here. And this shows you what the suspension system is like when the camera is then attached to the kite line, which is just off the photo here. And that maintains a certain amount of stability to the camera. Now, kites do move around. They obviously do move around. It's not to say by any stretch of the imagination that it's the most stable platform, but you fire enough photos as you're surveying your area, I can guarantee you'll get the pictures you need to bring the imagery together to do some photogrammetry or create some orthophotos. The sensors then that we've flown from our kite, like I said, we had a Nikon D70. So back then, this was around 2006-07 when we were doing the first sets of flights. This was a 500-pound body with a 24mm lens, and we put a reasonable amount of investment into a good quality lens so that we could collect some good imagery. That was a 6-megapixel sensor that we had on board. We've since trialled a D80, the new D7000 from Nikon, which is an 18-megapixel camera. These weigh around a kilo that the kite then lifts to acquire our imagery. The reason we went with this was to acquire the best imagery we could for the photogrammetry, and so we got imagery that was as geometrically stable as possible in comparison to a point-and-shoot camera. That's not to say you can't use a point-and-shoot, because lots of people do, but we wanted the best results we could get from the imagery we had. So just as a reminder about photogrammetry, this, and I don't know where this quote came from because I got this in my second year undergraduate class back in 1991. So in aerial survey, we have to take a large number of photos to a set plan from a moving platform at a great height and at a low temperature. Alone or collectively, these conditions are foreign to most photography. Despite this, a photogrammetrist requires excellent definition of a low contrast object, further reduced by poor atmospheric conditions. So we need really good photos from a very difficult environment to photograph from. So some of the techniques we used with our D70, we want sharp imagery, low light from a moving platform, so we tend to shoot with a medium aperture in order to get a fast shutter speed. So the imagery collected, this is a sample photo that we collected. That then was turned into an orthophoto, and you can see elevation points that we've collected off there to create our DEM. Again, another example of a photo, elevation points collected, and then our DEM with those points draped over it. This is our current project that we're working on, which is monitoring rapid change at a coastal environment, and this is using the D7000 setup over in the Netherlands. Okay, so just to summarise then, mesoscale remote sensing, increasingly important in geosciences. It's a missing resolution or revolution that's waiting to happen, and we're seeing now a marketplace developing that is really important across a whole range of data collection. Kites offer one solution. It's low cost, flexible, portable and accurate, and may be appropriate for certain types of applications along with the other platforms I've highlighted there. Thank you very much.